Good morning. Happy New Year. It's so neat to see all the choir members out here. Like, you're all sitting in different places than I'm used to. It's kind of throwing me off a little bit because I see you over here. But, you know, at 9 a.m., too, people sat in different places this year. I don't know if it's something about the new year. Like, this week, everybody just decided to mix it up a little bit. Or it's an early April Fool's Day thing. Our call to worship words are by Kenneth L. Patton. These are some of my favorite words of his from our hymnal. Let us worship with our eyes and ears and fingertips. Let us love the world through heart and mind and body. We feed our eyes upon the mystery and revelation in the faces of our brothers and sisters and siblings. We seek to know the wistfulness of the very young and the very old, the wistfulness of people in all times of life. We seek to understand the shyness behind arrogance, the fear behind pride, the tenderness behind clumsy strength, the anguish behind cruelty. All life flows into a great common life if we will only open our eyes to our companions. Let us worship, not in bowing down, not with closed eyes and stopped ears. Let us worship with the opening of all the windows of our beings, with a full outstretching of our spirits. Life comes with singing and laughter, with tears and confiding, with a rising wave too great to be held in the mind and heart and body to those who have fallen in love with life. Let us worship and let us learn to love. Our chalice lighting, is Marcia here? Yes. Thank you for lighting our chalice this morning. These are words I wrote for a change. Paint a chalice, sing a flame, sculpt religious community, and dance our faith into love. Our message for all ages today is a letter. Did any of you ever have an assignment in school to write a letter to someone? Yeah? Did you ever write a letter to someone famous? Anyone ever written a letter to someone famous? A couple. Well, I don't know why this particular English teacher did this, but she had her class write a letter to the author Kurt Vonnegut. And I think it's about a fifth grade class, if I recall correctly. And how many of you have ever read Kurt Vonnegut? Lots of adults, but not so many fifth graders, right? So that's why I think she must have been a particular fan, the teacher. So here is Kurt Vonnegut's response, dated November 5th, 2006. Dear Xavier High School, it was a high school. Dear Xavier High School and Ms. Lockwood and Messrs. Perrin, McFeely, Batten, Maurer, and Conguista, I thank you for your friendly letters. You sure know how to cheer up this really old geezer, 84, in his sunset years. I don't make public appearances anymore because I now resemble nothing so much as an iguana. What I had to say to you, moreover, would not take long, to wit. Practice any music, art, singing, dancing, drawing, painting, sculpting, poetry, fiction, essays, reportage, no matter how well or badly, not to get money or fame, but to experience becoming, to find out what's inside you, to make your soul grow. Seriously. I mean, starting right now, do art and do it for the rest of your lives. Draw a funny or nice picture of Ms. Lockwood and give it to her. Dance home after school, sing in the shower, and on and on. Make a face in your mashed potatoes, pretend you're Count Dracula. Here's an assignment for tonight, and I hope Ms. Lockwood will flunk you if you don't do it. Write a 6-line poem about anything but rhymed. No fair tennis without a net. Make it as good as you possibly can, but don't tell anybody what you're doing. Don't show it or recite it to anybody, not even your girlfriend or parents or whatever, or Ms. Lockwood, okay? Tear it up into teeny weeny pieces and discard them into widely separated trash receptacles. you will find that you have already been gloriously rewarded for your poem. You have experienced becoming, learned a lot more about what's inside you, and have made your soul grow. God bless you all. Kurt Vonnegut. So now, this is a question for kids and adults. Why did he tell people to tear up the poem he told them to write? Why tear up your poetry? I heard a couple answers at the same time. It remains personal. It was for you. Yeah. To keep your ego up? To keep your ego out of it, yes. Because it's not about how great you are. There was one back here. The writing is the journey. The writing is the journey, yes. The process is the goal. Any other reasons?
No attachment.
Right. It's ephemeral. Like everything is transitory, right? And your writing will fade in time anyway. So that you're not writing it for any particular purpose or to please anyone else. Yeah, all these reasons are reasons why you might tear up your art. The Buddhist monks, when they create sand mandalas, they destroy them afterwards. These beautiful pieces of art that they spend all this time working on and destroy it. And there's a tradition in lots of different spiritual practices and artistic practices of destroying art after you create it. And that can be for all these reasons, because the transitory nature of art, because you're letting go of attachment, because you thought it was bad. Because it doesn't matter if it was bad or for good, or because it was for you. So with those thoughts, our youth and kids are going to go off to their classes. And I understand that some of you will be doing some arts and crafts. You have my permission to tear it up and destroy it at the end if you want. Our words for your personal meditation or prayer this morning are titled, Let the Artists Win, by Bob Janice Dillon. I vote we let the artists win, the ones covered in paint from their last attempt to smuggle across the beauty of a bowl of fruit, the 14-year-old rapper learning to spit, throwing life's chaos on the rhythm wheel, uncovering the shapes that live on after the next break. I say we let the food bank volunteers win, the ones always carrying around their agenda for the meeting, waging campaigns to stock shelves with bread. I would like to see the nurses extend their string of victories from the hospital bed to the nation's boardrooms until we care for each other as if death were inevitable and mercy was the only thing that made rounds bearable. I say we let the kindergarten teachers win as they raise up small edifices for their beauty words will never capture or reveal. Maybe even let the helpless alcoholic win sometimes when she cries into her beer and declares it's all too much. I will let the grandmothers win when they tell the old stories and hold me in their keeping, and the children yelling, play, play, the ones who have already cost us so much of our final productivity, the only tyrants who can command the true attention of the wise. I want them to win too, again and again without pity. And then, when the men with the guns come, we can say, I'm sorry, but whether you win or lose, it's never really been my game, sir. I have lost and lost again 1,000 wars of the heart to those to whom I have waved the white flag, those to whom I have surrendered my whole and wholly of my life, and will never, never let me go. with all that's going on in the world, with the world on fire and standing on the brink of war, there was some temptation in me to scrap the sermon I had planned and to double down on a real social justice sermon about turning the world around. And indeed, that is something I often preach, but it felt important to me and the brink of a new year here to stop and step back from that and look at spiritual reflection. Look at what we can do to center ourselves and ground ourselves in order to prepare us for that work. And indeed, there's much I could say about art from a social justice perspective. I could look at art that spreads a social justice message, as so many pieces can do. I think primarily, always first, of Picasso's Guernica comes to mind when I think of art that transmits the horrors of war. And I could talk about art as doing justice. We have a monthly craftivism group that's been meeting since the fall where we're combining doing art with justice work, that you can do craft and art in a way to do good in this world. And one of the things we did was make toys and dolls to go to the Southeast India Project, for example. But art has something else to teach us, and that's about art as spiritual practice. That's about art as an enlarging and opening of the soul. And in thinking about this and thinking about like the Concord Prison Outreach Project, I thought about the fact my husband taught art history in the prisons in Michigan for several years before we moved. And there was something, I think, about these classes were really popular. Lots of students in the Jackson prisons took art history. And partly that was because they were working on a degree and it fit a degree requirement. But there's also something wonderful about teaching art. And I know Katie Weeks has taught music here in the Concord prisons, or music theory, about teaching something that's so expansive for the soul in a place where people are restrained and confined, that this is a way of breaking down prison walls to bring in educational programs, and particularly educational programs about something that makes the spirit sing. So, art, it's a spiritual practice. How is that so? I think about it from my own perspective of, like, as I do Zentangling, right? And that is a meditative practice that helps center you and focus you as you create art, and so is a therapeutic process in that way. Although some art therapists who've always known what we're just now discovering, that art can be therapeutic, would say that like coloring specifically isn't therapy, although it can be, I think, a spiritual practice because it's grounding and centering, but because it's not creating something new, except in the way you bring colors to it, they some of them argue that it's not art therapy. But they do say that, even those who disagree with that idea, say that Zentangling is a process that has shown measurable, demonstrable relaxation benefits. I'm going to quote Donna Betts, who is the president of the board of the American Art Therapy Association, says that she never has and never would use coloring books in art therapy because it's like the difference between listening to music versus learning how to play an instrument. Listening to music is something easy that everyone can do, but playing an instrument is a whole other skill set. I'm going to disagree with that. I'm going to let the art therapists argue that out. But what we're going to talk about is spiritual practice in art. Christine Walters-Paintner, who's a Benedictine oblate and founder of a nonprofit art and spirituality association called Abbey of the Arts, writes this: art making encourages curiosity and wonder and respect to the deeper mystery of work in the world and the multidimensionality of God. The arts do not provide linear explanations of how things function, but point to the complexities and ambiguities of living. They both reveal and conceal and invite us to rely on more intuition than on logic or reason. The arts help us to awaken, she says, and enliven us. Engaging in creative acts is a vitalizing activity. The experience of being fully present has been described as being in a flow or altered state of awareness where our sense of time changes. We become lost and absorbed and yet fully present to what we are doing. It can be playful, encouraging a sense of wonder and joy again. It can be loving and witnessing to presence in what is stirring within us and folding around us. It can be a safe container for us to explore difficult feelings and experiences. And it can serve as a vehicle for confession and forgiveness as we make a space to hold our woundedness. So rather than defining which art is and is not spiritual practice or therapeutic, and which practice is or is not art, whether it's painting, pottery, drawing, coloring, weaving, textile works, and handcrafts of various sort, or anything, rather than cataloging what you might find spiritual or helpful, I want to talk about why art is spiritual and helpful. Why it's therapeutic, why it's spiritual, why it's a practice for engagement. When I was taking a class a few summers ago on alcohol ink painting, the instructor gave us the order to begin by painting without trying to do anything purposeful or especially representative. I found this very difficult. All the art I'd ever done was drawing something, a flower, a chalice, a butterfly, whatever. But what she wanted us to learn was that when working with alcohol inks, you literally have to go with the flow. You can't really control the outcome too much. So unlike drawing, where every stroke of a pen or pencil can have purpose, with alcohol ink paints, you're using techniques like blowing the paint to where you want it to go, or splattering alcohol to mar the paint off the top of a toothbrush. You're picking up the paper and having the paint run this way and that way. It is an exercise in going with the flow. The spiritual lesson that we can learn from art is sometimes life is like that. It helps us to begin by thinking of art as a process, not a product, which is why that earlier letter from Kurt Vonnegut instructs the students to destroy the art they've created. Another spiritual lesson I've learned from art is about finding your center. In meditation, you need to find your center or your balance to align, to find that still small voice within. Well, you need that in pottery, too. On my first sabbatical that I took a pottery class. And I learned that when you are doing the potter's wheel, when you are trying to raise a vessel, you can't just start it spinning and whoop, up goes a vase. You have to find the clay's center first. And if you don't find the clay's center, any vessel you raise will be off center and ultimately will probably collapse. But in order to find the clay's center, you have to find your own center. You have to find balance and rhythm with the clay. Until you and the clay are balanced and centered together, you will not make anything. You will make a wobbly mess. In singing, as singing is an art, like chanting is a spiritual practice, you have to pay attention to breath, right? To your rhythm. You have to lose yourself sometimes in the collective voice and know when to find your own voice rising above. You have to find the spiritual message about losing the self and finding the self. Spirituality is about that, about when are you part of the one and when are you a single being. About opening yourself up to that which is larger than life and opening yourself up to who you are at your core. Art does these things, connects us through image, through color, through touch, through movement to the world around us. And beauty. Art as a spiritual practice can open us up to the beauty of the world. The soul lifts higher. We connect to that eternal source of life or that which is bigger than us, to the cosmos or to God, when we behold vast beauty. We know this when we go out in nature, that we feel that sense of majestic infiniteness when we behold the sunset or the stars at night or the ocean or great lakes. But art, too, opens us up like that. Brad Nelson of the Mars Hill Bible Church, an evangelical church where I thought I'd have nothing in common with this pastor's writing, he writes, "This may not be true for everyone, but I have a hunch it's true for many. Experiencing beauty does something to restore the soul. Regular exposure to beauty makes us feel alive. And I think it does so in part because beauty is what we were made for. And that beneath the broken surface of our lives, as Thomas Merton would say, beauty is a reflection of who we are and what the world is." He says, "I know no better word to describe what I sense in moments of beauty than the word wholeness." Like the purpose of beauty in art to open up and restore the soul, the pattern and purpose in art can also connect us to something greater. Islamic art, as we explored in the fall in our World Religions seminar, uses geometric patterns like Celtic knotwork to represent the order and pattern of the universe and the order and infinite nature of God. Patterns are infinite. They can go on forever. And Buddhist and Taoist art, they teach us simplicity and spontaneity. There are spiritual lessons we can take from our own art and teach ourselves through art as well. There's no end to the messages we can learn through art and the ways that we can engage and engage our spirits, and beholding art can affect our spirits. So I'll end with a last note, imperfection. The world is an imperfect, broken, and hurting place. And it's perfect and whole and holy like that. One of the lessons I've learned through art is to give up on my image of perfection and to let the results of art be what it is. It's perfect like that. This is not to say we don't keep striving, that we don't keep bending the arc towards justice, that we don't learn a craft and get better and better at it, but it's to say that we also embrace ourselves as imperfect beings, loved and yet lovable. And art teaches us this. The Buddhist monks put a flaw in every sand mandala. Because there is a flaw in everything. There's some flaw in every painting, in every drawing. Leave it there. In Zen Tangle, they have a tangle that you can put over any flaw. You draw a little raspberry on top of it. And they don't teach you, in the book I learned from, they didn't teach you this at first because they said, if we taught you this right away, you'd be putting raspberries all over everything. Because sometimes you just have to let the flaw be. The pattern gets broken accidentally. Oops. So let all of our flaws be like raspberries. And through being like raspberries, broken and yet whole and holy, may our art and our lives be that much more delicious. Our closing hymn is number 118, "This Little Light of Mine." Please stand in body or in spirit and join in singing. It's about letting your art shine and your life shine.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Let it shine.
Our closing words are by Susan L. Van Dresser. Let us sing the imagination by which we know one another and learn the lives of eras gone by. Let us sing the magic of creation by which we build the world of our soul and teach its wisdom to others, young and old. Let us sing the magic of our lives together, holding and shaping by the movement of breath from heart to lung all new life that is to come. Go now with singing. Go now with magic in your fingertips. Touch this world with life. Make good art.
Peace be with you till we meet again. As life lays its task before you, keep love's banner floating o'er you. Peace be with you till we meet.